Welcome everyone to this episode of the Completely Cricket Podcast. On this episode today, we will be talking about the England-Ireland test that recently concluded, which finished in 3 days and led to England winning convincingly by 10 wickets. Some may say that they, you know, completely obliterated Ireland, but at the same time, there was some very good batting from Ireland, especially their low order in their second innings. And it was quite an interesting test just to see how this England team, you know, adopting the style of Baswell doing against another team and how they would look just in the build-up towards the Ashes. So it was quite an interesting test. We will also be talking about our pre-Ashes thoughts. We're going to look at England's squad selection. We're going to look at how some of the players have played in the Ireland test and how they might do against Australia. So it's obviously Australia is a completely different beast, but it is still some indication of how some of these English players will play. And we will just talk about the Ashes in general, you know, potential lineups for the first test and strategies and things like that, basically. So that's really all we're going to talk about in this episode. Zane, would you like to do our episode announcements?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, welcome back, everyone. And as usual, if you do enjoy the content that we produce every episode, then please do head over to our Completely Cricket Instagram and like the post of any episode that you did enjoy. And also if you have any questions or anything you want to, any comments that you have about our about the podcast, then please you know, comment on any Instagram post, or just we would love to hear about what you have to say.
That we love hearing from you guys, and just to see what your thoughts are about things like of the cricket that's going on. So yeah, well, let's go on to the England Ireland test, and we're going to start from we'll start with obviously go chronological order. So we'll start with Ireland's batting performance. 172 all out. The key highlight was really Stuart Broad's fifer. It was a pretty good fifer. It was the 20th fifer in Test cricket. Dave, what are your thoughts on his bowling throughout the actual test? Because obviously first innings took a fifer, second innings, especially as Ireland managed to negate the new ball and batted, you know, through for more than, you know, 50 overs, he batted for a while. You know, it looked like Stuart Broad sort of was a bit clueless. It was struggling really in terms of there wasn't really that effect you get from Stuart Broad, that sort of threat, that zip in a way. How did you think, you know, his two bowling innings contrasted?
Yeah, so I, as you said, you know, in the first innings he bowled really well to get that fifer, and obviously as we saw, Ireland really improved their batting in the second innings when they scored, you know, almost 200 more runs than in the first innings. So I think, you know, that might have put Broad, you know, under a little bit of pressure, like suddenly, you know, seeing an Ireland team that, you know, we're not really used to. I think really that Ireland's second innings, especially the partnership between McBrien and Mark Adair, I think, you know, they kind of sort of took on a little bit of Baswell in that sort of little period. And I think that might have taken Stuart Broad by surprise, and the entire English bowling attack. It could have, but yeah, Broad especially, he got a wicket in the second innings. But, you know, as you said, that sort of zip, that sort of threat that we've known Stuart Broad to provide for many years now, you know, that wasn't quite there in the second innings. But yeah, I think all credit to Ireland. I think they batted really well in the second innings. But yeah, I just think that maybe, you know, when they sort of took on that basketball style just a little bit in the second innings, I think that might have taken Broad by surprise.
Honestly, I think he looked a little bit clueless, really. I think, you know, if you look at Jimmy Anderson, and you know, obviously obviously him with the new balls, him swinging it both ways is a huge threat for any batsman. But even you know, when he's bowling for his second or third spell in the day, you know, maybe it's over 70 and it's not swinging, he still tries things. He looks quite creative in the way he goes about getting wickets and trying to get wickets. Whereas Stuart Broad sort of felt a little bit, you know, one dimensional in a way, which was, you know, which isn't the best sight for England's bowling attack. But obviously they've got other bowlers. So in that case, in the second innings, obviously Josh Tung performed really well, and he took his debut fifer on his debut test. How did you think his performance was overall in the test, Zaid?
Yeah, I think it's really good. I mean, he had to wait a bit to get his first wicket because he went wicketless in the first innings. But yeah, he got 5 in the second. I think he has sort of that just a little bit of extra pace. He'll bowl, I mean, from what I've seen, I think he bowls a little bit more back of a length. And, you know, sort of gets at the batsman. And he's not, you know, as quick as someone like Mark Wood, for example. But, you know, Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, these guys are on a different level in terms of pace. But, you know, Josh Tung, he just has that sort of extra zip, which is really useful as a fast bowler. And, yeah, I think he bowled really well. I think, you know, when, I mean, looking into sort of the Ashes, you know, he might not get, you know, as many games there because, you know, Anderson will be back then. Ollie Robinson will be there. So, you know, we'll see how it goes in the future. But yeah, in this game, you know, I really enjoyed watching, you know, sort of that sort of extra zip, extra bounce that he provides as a fast bowler.
We did see in this test where he used that extra zip and that pace and to bowl a lot of short balls. Primarily to tail enders, but also he did bowl it to sort of towards midway through the innings and towards the number 6-7 type of batsman. But you know, England did a lot of short bowling through Josh Tung, and that it didn't really bring, you know, it didn't bring any rewards as such. It wasn't clear that okay, the team, you know, the batting order was struggling to face the short balls, considering he isn't really he's a pace bowler, but he's not express pace. He won't bowl regularly above 90 miles an hour like Mark Wood will do. Do you think the short ball was a valid strategy, or do you think, you know, it was a bit misguided?
I think in general, bowling, obviously, ideally, if you're bowling short balls, then you obviously want to be, as you said, something like Mark Wood's pace. Or Jofra Archer's pace, you know, that would be the ideal situation. But I think, you know, the thing you sort of get with tail enders is that they'll kind of just have a go. They'll just, you know, try and get some extra runs. They'll just try. It's sort of a bonus, the amount of runs tail enders get. So I think when you try and bowl short, when you get it in there, I think tail enders will mainly just try and have a go at it, or they might duck, or they'll try something. And they might, you know, they might top it at 6, or they might miss it, whatever will happen. But I think, for me, I think bouncers, short balls, I think they're better to the top order. Just because, you know, top order will be more used to sort of, you know, facing that sort of swing, and, you know, getting in a short ball, banging one short in there every now and again will sort of, you know, get them thinking, get them on the back foot. So I think for me that it'll be a little bit more effective, especially considering Tung's pace, which isn't, you know, as you said, isn't express pace. So I think that might be a bit more useful to the top order, but you know, to the tail enders, I think definitely it'll be a better idea. Which Josh Tung, he tried a little bit later on, like much later on in the second innings of Ireland. You're bowling Yorkers, bowling much fuller, because I think, you know, that will attack. If you attack the stumps more, that's more likely that you're going to get wickets, you know, finish off the tail enders quicker than if you just try and bang it in short, which can work. But for me, I think, you know, try and get it in there full and just attack the stumps, really.
Short in itself as a length is quite a generic length, because, you know, anything that comes up to sort of your armpits, your shoulders type of level, anything up to, you know, way above your head is classified as short, really. And I'm just trying to think in my mind in Test cricket, someone like Mitchell Johnson, who, you know, left arm bowling, he would bowl round the wicket and, you know, really banging short balls, but they weren't short in the sense that they're going flying above the batsman's head like some of Josh Tung's bowling did go really, really properly short. It was more like it was trying to get it into that armpit, that sort of shoulder length, and really make the batsman uncomfortable. And I guess the strategy behind that is because obviously if they start to get uncomfortable and quite edgy, then, you know, bowl a couple of fuller deliveries and they'll look to try and get themselves a strike and nick it and get, you know, you can take wickets. Or they'll miss time a pull, for example. I think that's the ideal length that you want. But you've got to be pretty quick to be able to bowl that. Obviously, it wasn't the short ball that really undid Ireland's, you know, first innings, their batting. It was quite interesting because, you know, watching them, they were doing a lot of, you know, they were coming down the wicket, they were sort of shuffling really cross onto off stump and, you know, trying to play flicks. You know, there was one batsman got out trying to flick the ball off Stuart Broad and it went straight to leg slip. You know, a lot of LBWs. What was that all about, Zane? What was the the strategy behind, you know, trying to move all the way across the stumps on off stump and, you know, play everything leg side, especially against Stuart Broad?
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting tactic. It's a really interesting idea. But yeah, not something we see all the time. I think, you know, if we're trying to sort of link that to basketball, I think basketball's more about not trying funky stuff, but it's more just, you know, just playing more attacking cricket, as, you know, we've talked about basketball so many times for a long time now. So, you know, basketball, I think, is more about, you know, playing more attacking shots. I think, you know, with Ireland, it was really interesting to see in the first innings. You know, they, you know, as you said, try, you know, back and across, try interesting flicks and every now and again. I think for me, it was a little bit unnecessary because considering you're playing against an England side that are really strong, obviously, and they're preparing for an Ashes summer, which is coming very soon. So they're not going to sort of play lightly or anything. It would be probably an idea to try, you know, your best, just play your best cricket, you know, with the cricket that you've been playing all this time. I think that's would be a better idea rather than you trying this interesting stuff, which you can do, you know, anywhere else, not against a team that's about to go into, you know, one of the biggest test series. So I think it's interesting idea, but I think really, you know, that's not some sort of thing you want to be trying. I think you either want to go for more classic test cricket, you know, just take your time and, you know, just play out the balls, or you go for a bit more basketball, which is just, you know, play some more attacking shots and try and get runs quicker.
I think it's quite, it really shows the Ireland's inexperience at test cricket, at the level of test cricket, and because obviously they haven't played very much, especially in conditions in somewhere like England where the ball will swing, you know, the Dukes will swing a lot. And especially with Stuart Broad bringing it back in, and then you're also shuffling across. It's sort of being set up for LBWs. And I think that's what really, you know, caused Ireland to be undone in the first innings. And you could see from the second innings there was a very significant difference in the way they approached their batting, and they were more sensible. But they also decided to put pressure early on, and they were scoring runs. Moving on to England's batting performance, you know, Ben Duckett, I think 180, Ollie Pope 200. I think Ollie Pope and Ben Duckett both broke a few records to do with quickest, you know, the speed at which they scored runs. Ollie Pope scoring 100 runs in one session in England for the first time that had been done by a single batsman. You know, do you think that these runs that they're scoring now against Ireland obviously, they're going to give them confidence, give them both batsmen confidence. Do you think it's good practice for the Ashes, or do you think it's more like, sort of like, you know, this is no disrespect to Ireland as such, but it's obviously Ireland haven't played very much test cricket, but is this the quality of bowling sort of like net practice for them in a way? Would you say that, or would you say that this is, you know, really, this practice vital for both batsmen leading into an Ashes series?
I mean, for me, it's doesn't matter who you're playing. If you go into an Ashes series knowing that you just scored 100 or 80 or 200, you're going to be in a much better position to score more runs in the Ashes. Obviously, you know, we know that Australia are going to be a much fiercer bowling attack than Ireland. But Ireland aren't bad at all, really. I mean, they're still a decent bowling attack, you know, coming into test cricket, you know, putting up a fight in general, you know, in their batting, they put up a real fight, pushing them to the limits there in the second innings. But yeah, I think definitely it wouldn't say it's net practice at all, because, you know, also considering you're doing it in front of, you know, at Lord's, which is always brilliant, in front of a decent crowd as well, a lot of Irish fans, a lot of English fans. So, you know, a decent crowd. I think it's really, you know, it's a really good feeling to, you know, score that many runs. And also, yeah, with the moment you go into an Ashes series, which is in, what, 2 weeks or so, you know, if I've just scored a double 100 at Lord's the other week, I'm probably going to be in a much better situation to be able to, you know, maybe able to repeat that and score some more runs. So I think, I wouldn't say it's net practice for me. I think, you know, it's definitely a big confidence booster, as you said, and, you know, it'll definitely help them for mentally for the Ashes.
There was a big question, especially after Ben Stokes declared on what I think it was 524/4, that players like Harry Brook, Ben Stokes himself, and and Jonny Bairstow, who've not played a lot of Red Bull cricket recently, wouldn't have got enough practice in terms of, you know, out there in a match conditions, you know, on Lord's English pitches to actually, you know, face a few balls and, you know, really build up innings and get themselves a sense of confidence as such. Obviously, these players back themselves, you know, regardless of whether they played recently or not. But do you think, say, that England could have maybe, especially when they knew, obviously seeing that Ben Duckett and Ollie Pope scoring loads of runs, you know, potentially waited on the declaration because they also have 4 days, and you know, maybe given people like Harry Brook, Jonny Bairstow, some more time out in the middle? Or do you think that they should be fine, that it's not much of a difference?
Well, I think if we look down that batting order, I think someone like Ollie Pope, he really needed those runs and that he wrote that time in the middle. So that was definitely important for him. In terms of like the declaration, I'd say another option might have been to, for someone like Jonny Bairstow especially, I mean, he's just come from county cricket from a serious injury. So he's just come back. So he definitely needs a bat. I think he should have batted a little bit higher in that game. You know, perhaps above, I don't know, maybe Harry Brook. Because I think Harry Brook, you can kind of get away with him not having much of a bat because, you know, we know what he can do. And he's been playing some county cricket. He's you know, he's been looking good for England as well. So I think that's not a huge issue. I think Ben Stokes as well shouldn't be a huge issue. I think more Jonny Bairstow is more the problem there because, you know, they play their best batting lineup, which is fair enough. But I think someone like you know, Bairstow, he should have batted a bit higher rather than extend the declaration, because if you do that, I think that's sort of almost as wasting the game if you just extend the declaration. I mean, they would end up scoring what, 700, 800 runs, which is just a bit unnecessary. So I think getting in Jonny Bairstow a little bit higher in the order for that innings or that game would have been much better idea. Or even I know it was only 12 runs, but even in the second innings, I mean, why open with Zach Crawley and Ben Duckett when Ben Duckett just scored 180, Crawley's just scored 50? You could get in Jonny Bairstow to have a little hit there, you know, for an over or so. But, you know, I think there were things that they could have done to make sure that Jonny Bairstow is definitely ready for the Ashes rather than just, you know, work on his keeping.
I think you're right. I was thinking of a similar thing, you know, especially the second innings, why not? Excuse me. Yeah, they England had nothing really to lose at that point. But even in the first things, I think, you know, shuffling the order would have been really interesting because, you know, I guess in different match scenarios throughout the Ashes, obviously a 5-test series, there easily could have been a scenario where you might want to put up someone like Jonny Bairstow to really, if you want to go, for example, if you might, if you think that someone like Zach Crawley's been struggling throughout the series, maybe drop him to a sort of 5 role. And then, you know, or 6, for example, and then put Bairstow up opening, for example. I guess, you know, it just allows you to try different combinations. And it would have been interesting to see different players bat a bit higher up, for example. But it obviously doesn't, you know, I think we obviously realise the quality of these players and you know, they will get loads of practice beforehand in terms of nets and whatever else they do, you know, as part of the England setup. So then you think about Ireland's bowling. See, they, to me, when I was watching, they seemed like quite a very one-dimensional bowling attack. And they were quite flat in the sense that they didn't, it felt like they were, obviously England punished them every time they weren't bowling up, you know, the best length bowl. But there were too many freebies. There were too many wider, short deliveries. They were, you know, didn't look like they were using that new Duke's ball very well. And considering how England batted, especially at the start of their innings, England took the shine off the ball very quickly, and Ireland weren't exactly preventing that. They were sort of, you know, feeding that in a way, and it sort of seemed like they were getting hit. So do you think that if, for example, Josh Little was sort of rested, because he'd be playing, he'd have an important role. He played in the IPL with Gujarat Titans in the final, and then he also is going to be playing in the World Cup qualifiers that are coming for Ireland soon. Do you think if Josh Little, what do you think the impact would have been if Josh Little had played and opened the bowling for Ireland? You know, left arm pace bowler who bowls a lot quicker than the rest of the Ireland bowlers, and, you know, and swings it in. Do you think it would have been a significant difference?
Yeah, I think it could have been. You know, considering the experience he's just gained playing an entire season of the IPL, he got a brilliant experience playing in the final against Chennai Super Kings. So that would have been good. I think, you know, Ireland don't have like anyone who's express pace. So that obviously means, you know, they can't, they have to bowl, you know, good tight lines. They have to use the swing well, which, as you said, they didn't really use the new ball very well. And, you know, when I was watching, you know, in those middle overs especially, it was just kind of like England just, it was just as if, you know, they were just batting. It was just too easy, kind of. Like they could, it's almost like they were dictating, oh, this ball's going to be four, or this ball's going to be two, or this ball's going to be a dot. That's all I was really seeing there. So, you know, considering Ireland don't have that express pace, they've got to work with what they do have, you know, which is some good bowlers that can, you know, get in some decent lines and lengths. That's what I think they should have done a bit better. And that would have also given England a much harder test, and that would have also helped them for the Ashes. But obviously, I'm not going to think about that. But yeah, I think Josh Little, if he came back, if he was playing this game, I think I definitely agree with him being rested, because obviously, you know, he's been playing the IPL. And lots of cricket recently, but yeah, if he did play, that would have definitely, you know, provided another sort of X factor to the Irish bowling attack, and would have, you know, provided a decent challenge for England, and swing it back in. That's not always easy for a right-hander to play, you know, a left-armer bowling over the wicket, swinging it back in. So I think that would have been you know, an interesting idea to bring him back. But I think he definitely would have provided lots to the Irish bowling attack.
So looking forward to the Ashes, you know, obviously 11 wins in 13 tests for England, you know, a very convincing win against Ireland. England will take a lot of confidence from that and this run that they've been on over the last year. I think that for us as fans and people who watch these tests, something has appeared to be sort of an Achilles heel for England. It's sort of been their bowling to tail enders and their ability to finish off an innings against another team as a bowling attack. You know, for example, I think McBride and Mark Adair's partnership was roughly 130 maybe, or even more. It was a significant partnership that was basically, in the end, the backbone of Ireland's second innings runs. So, you know, there were some interesting approaches. There was, we mentioned the short ball approach. Zay, do you think that against a quality team like Australia, do you think that will be exposed, you know, their sort of inability to finish the innings off quickly? Because that was a good 20, 30 overs that those two lasted. And it really, you know, it actually gave Ireland some sort of fight and sort of, some sort of hope. If Australia can do that and they can bat to 11, so if they're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 can score an extra 200 runs, do you think that might push England from being in a position to win a test into being a position that they're on the back foot?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely could, because, you know, the sort of tactics they've been trying haven't really worked. And also, you know, the sort of short ball tactic we talked about a little bit earlier, that's definitely not going to work against Australia, because, you know, you're thinking about Australia, they've just come from, you know, places where the pitches are, you know, hard, bouncy, you know, quick pitches. So they'd be used to all of this. So I think you definitely want to use something like the Lord's Test. You could even maybe, for Anderson, hope that it's overcast conditions, you can get some really good swing. That would probably exploit the top order. But then, you know, when you're talking about the tail enders, yeah, you've got to use those tactics better. You can try the short ball, it's definitely an option. But, you know, you've got to mix it up as well, though. But you can't just keep going to short ball and allow, and, you know, mess it up really and allow Australia to score, you know, loads more runs than there really should be. Because, you know, we've seen recently that England have got teams to sort of seven, eight wickets down, and then suddenly there's been another 100, 150 runs for the last couple of wickets, which is not ideal. So yeah, it definitely could exploit them. It could cause difficulties for England, and it would put lots of pressure on the English batsmen as well, because, you know, they would have been much calmer thinking that, oh, that we've got them out for a lower target. But then, you know, they need to finish off games. That's something, as you mentioned, the sort of Achilles heel of the English bowling attack at the moment. You know, they haven't been able to finish off an innings perfectly yet.
And I think it's actually, you know, if they're going to score, if Australia score 150 extra runs from the last four batsmen, then England sort of have to do the same thing, if you get what I mean. Because if you think about it, obviously English batting lineup is looking really, really good. They're scoring loads of runs. it's typically been on flat pitches, but England, Ben Stokes did mention he's asked for the groundsman to make the pitches quite flat and less assistance to the bowlers, so England can sort of outscore Australia as such. So that's the idea. But, you know, England, if the Aussies can get the ball swinging and England are in trouble, you know, can their number 8, 9, 10, 11 score an extra 150 runs? Unlikely. I think it is unlikely. But the Australian 8, 9, 10, 11 probably have a better chance. So that's something that we've really got to consider. Something else that's quite interesting is, you know, Jack Leach and his bowling to left-handers. Obviously, himself bowling left-arm off-spin. So he's bowling it into the arc of the left-hander. And in this test, we had Andy McBrien, who was left-hander. But, Jack Leach is struggling against left-handers. People like Rishabh Pant, for example, in previous tests, has been well-documented. It's quite known that, you know, he's going to struggle. And for an Australian batting lineup that has left-handers, people like David Warner, who can be really explosive, especially, you know, if he's scored a 50, for example, and Jack Leach is on and trying to bowl, like, you know, trying to bowl in the sort of, you know, 60, 70s over period, you know, David Warner will be looking to hit him. Do you think England's Ashes hopes to an extent rest on how Jack Leach bowls? And do you think Jack Leach will sort of rise to the occasion and be able to sort of defeat that tag as such that he struggles to bowl to left-handers and he'll be able to get people like David Warner out?
Yeah, it's possible. I think something, you know, that Australia have that England don't is that, you know, that sort of extra depth to the batting lineup. England do as well. But, you know, as you said, you know, Australia's, 8, 9, 10, 11 are much more likely to score more runs than the England 8, 9, 10, 11. So, you know, that's one thing Australia have. England have sort of the confidence, you know, they've won 11 out of their last 11 out of 13 games under Bazball. So, you know, that's what England have. So, you know, Jack Leach, you know, I think there was a statistic, I can't remember the exact statistic, but during the England Ireland match, they were talking about this, the commentators, and they gave the statistic that Jack Leach has a much higher average and a significantly much higher average bowling to left-handers than he does to right-handers. So obviously he's been really, you know, they said that he's been really working hard over the winter on many aspects, and he's looking really good to the right-hander. You know, spinning it away, sort of that sort of angle he provides as well, being a left-arm spinner. So to the left-hander, as you said, it's sort of in the arc to someone like Rishabh Pant will come in and try and hit it. But, you know, think about Australia, David Warner batting at the top. I mean, Jack Leach would have hoped that David Warner's out by then. But I think, you know, in some of the games, you might not even play Jack Leach, which is what I was thinking, because you might decide to go with four or five pace bowlers and no spinners, rather than going with one spinner. So that's something that to consider. But yeah, it could be that if Jack Leach has a good spell, he doesn't, you know, get away with the left-handers don't hit him for too many runs. So it's possible, but I think, you know, there's other factors involved as well. So, you know, he's been bowling really well to the right-hander. So I think England should just try and use that rather than, you know, worrying about what he might do to the left-hander.
Yeah, I think obviously you can't predict Jack Leach to bowl bad against left-handers. He can bowl well, and he's been, you know, he's been one of the players who fans will say has sort of had a second wind to his career as such, because through Bazball, and he's looked like a different player, and he's been very effective as well. And obviously we saw some of Joe Root's part-time off-spin in this test, and it can take a wicket, but against someone like a team like Australia, he went at, I think, 6.5 or something along the lines of that against Ireland. Against Australia, you know, with that type of bowling, he will go for runs. So I think it is important, especially if pitch is going to be flat, to have the ability to have a good spinner. So Jack Leach will be quite important. He might not play all five tests, but I think he'll have a significant role in this upcoming Ashes series. just having a quick look at the bowling attack, we talked about Josh Tang, but we didn't talk about Matthew Potts, who also bowled. And, you know, I'd say he bowled well overall. At times, you know, they were a bit too short and he did get hit a little bit, but there was some good bowling from him. Zaid, obviously, you know, for the Ashes, we assume that Jimmy Anderson, Ollie Robinson will be back in, plus Stuart Broad, that says that makes three paces. And three paces and Jack Leach, or if let's say Jack Leach doesn't play, someone like Mark Wood comes into the game. Do you think Josh Tung and Matthew Potts well, let's start with Josh Tung. Do you think he's done enough to fight for an Ashes spot? Oh, he's in the squad. The squad is the same as the Ireland squad, so he's there. But do you think he's done enough to really challenge for a place, or do you think, you know, it's going to be more like if injuries continue to persist, then he will play?
Yeah, I think England have been really working hard on Mark Wood to try and get him fit for the Ashes. So I think definitely for the first two tests, which are at Edgbaston and Lords, I don't think either of Matthew Potts or Josh Tung are going to play. Just because I think you definitely want to get your best team out for the first test and the last test. And then if you need to, you know, rest someone along the way, you might do that. But I think first two tests are really important. So I think you want to get your best bowling attack out. And considering, you know, Anderson will be back, Robinson will probably be back. And, you know, they're really working on a Mark Wood to get him back. And also, we've already talked about Jack Leach. You know, he might play in some games, but he definitely will play in some games. And he might miss out on one or two games as well. It makes it difficult to fit in Josh Tung because he and Matthew Potts. Because I think Josh Tung, yes, he got five for and he got five for in the England game, but he's only had one game, so he lacks experience at the moment. And it's not his fault. I mean, he hasn't been selected for England yet. So I think he might get a game or so, but I don't think he's really gonna be like a. I don't think he's gonna play much in the Ashes. Just because he hasn't played enough, and you know, England will probably go to their main sort of strike bowlers, you know, Anderson, Broad, Robinson, Wood, if he's fit enough to play. So I think, you know, it's tough, but I just don't think there'll be enough room for him.
I think it really shows how, you know, the Ashes series is so important for England, England test team. It's a proper test of their credentials, right? And I think it's something unlike, you know, even England-India test series won't get to this sort of level of hype and this real competition because it's such a long-lasting rivalry. And I think that England, I think that it's so important to them. So they will obviously look to play the best squad, but it also means that experience is going to be valued. You know, how many Ashes series have Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson played? Loads is, you know, the answer. It's so many. So they know they've been in so many different situations. They've been on the losing side, the winning side. It's going to be quite highly looked at, and I think, you know, we've talked decently, quite negatively about aspects of England's play, just because obviously everyone's talking about the good stuff, but you know it's always really important to look at, you know, different aspects in which England might struggle in. So, you know, that, on this episode, that's really what we've done. We sort of looked at, you know, where they might slip up, and I think it's quite interesting. But England obviously will have this Ashes is probably their. The best shot at winning this Ashes will looks like the best shot at winning that they've had in the last since probably 2015 Trent Bridge. So it's going to be quite good. It's going to be quite exciting. But we will do a full Ashes predictions type of episode in the upcoming weeks before the Ashes. So have a keep a lookout for that. But that's it for this episode. Thank you very much, Zaid, and we will see you in the weeks to come.